Chapter 66. Gamay swam into the Minerve through the opening Paul had cut. She was still getting her bearings when the tremor of the Griffin's explosion reached her. Is that what I think it was? The rumbling came in two waves, with the second vibration much larger. Sounds like the fireworks have begun up on the surface, Paul replied. It won't be long now. Any word from Kurt or Rudy? Nothing. First things first. Find that container. Gamay looked around. She had entered the submarine on the side of the control room and began moving aft. Unlike the Dakar, the Minerve had been sealed against the outside world for 50 years. Saltwater had come in, but sea life had been kept at bay. She found 3 bodies partially preserved in the control room, another 2 in the next compartment. The 3rd compartment should have been closed off by a watertight door, but Gamay found a chain wrapped around the hatch wheel. Whether the sub was scuttled or sabotaged, it was definitely sent to the bottom on purpose, she said. Someone chained these doors open.
Wouldn't surprise me if the French members of the crew realized they were in shallow waters and decided to act, Paul said. They might have thought they were closer to shore than they actually were.
Gamay found another body just beyond the purposely opened hatch. Doesn't look like many of them escaped.
We need to hurry if we're going to escape, Paul said.
Swimming through the hatch, Gamay shined her light around, looking for the container. They'd been briefed by the Israelis to look for a 3-foot-long stainless steel cylinder with a diameter of 20 inches. It had bands at each end and held 2 smaller containers inside. The plan was simple. Find the counteragent and get far enough away from the Minerve that Tess's men would never spot them. Even in clear water, visibility was no more than a few 100 yards. Beyond that, they'd vanish in the scattered blue light. Without an acquisition and targeting sonar, it would be nearly impossible for Tessa to find them. That would force her to choose between hanging around and prolonging the search, or heading for the hills with all possible speed. Every minute the Monarch spent on the water increased the risk of detection and retaliatory action. None of them expected Tessa to give up without a fight, but she couldn't risk staying too long. It was a good plan, Gamay told herself, but not without problems. The entire plan depended on finding the container holding the countermeasure and getting out of there before Tessa and her crew made visual contact. And they'd been planning to use the Griffin's high-speed submersible to tow them into the endless blue. If that submersible had been destroyed or damaged beyond repair in the attack, the only real method of putting distance between themselves and the Minerve was to use the thrusters in the trench crawler. And that would be a much slower method of escaping. After clearing the compartment she was in, Gamay moved aft yet again. Paul floated outside the submarine, near the opening he'd cut, and was taking advantage of the trench crawler's automatic station-keeping feature to remain in place. He continued turning from quarter to quarter, scanning the sea around him for any sign of Kurt and Rudy, but saw nothing but blue water. The only company he had was a curious barracuda that swam up over the top of the submarine and hovered there, eyeballing him for a moment. It held itself in place as easily as Paul did, then turned slightly and darted away at incredible speed. The next sign of movement came from directly above. Paul looked up as a line of foam and bubbles streaked across the surface as the keel of the Monarch touched down, carving a straight line to the west. The Monarch has landed.